once again, topic for the meeting today is isolation, the darkroom, where negatives are developed. And our first speaker tonight is Elizabeth.
Thank God everyone went to get the paper prize. Life is good. I'm Elizabeth and I'm an addict. And of course, you know, I approach like topic meetings like they're an assignment. And of course, you know, I have the what the hell is it? Hi. I'm Elizabeth and I'm an addict. Oh, that sounds stupid. Look, I can stand here and talk. I have a bartender voice. I could just use that. Anyway, you know, this topic was like, you know, topic meetings scare the shit out of me because I'm always afraid I'm going to like fall off topic and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, everyone's going to be like, oh, she just didn't say shit about what the topic was. And, you know, at this point I have to do the disclaimer. Like if I fall off the topic and you don't like it, fucking call your sponsor or go to another meeting or whatever, because all I have is whatever I have. And that's all I got. And, you know, I'm not a yo drop the mic shit, you know what I mean? Like, I'm an addict and I'm supposed to share my experience, strength, and hope, and that's all the fuck I got. And that meeting earlier made me like weepy, so I may still be weepy now. Anyway, you know, isolation is like, the one weapon that I'm really good at getting myself with. And I can do it without even knowing that I'm attacking myself. And I can do it and make it seem like it's a healthy thing. And I can use it to take me back to places that I don't want to be. And, you know, the thing I like about Narcotics Anonymous is it's like never alone, never again. You know, and isolation was probably the biggest weapon my disease has when I was using, and it's the biggest weapon it's got now. And, you know, at the end of my using, I was alone. I didn't talk to people. I used by myself. I wasn't interested in using with anybody else. I didn't think I was worthy to use with anybody else. I didn't want anybody to know what the hell was going on with me. So, you know, nobody was going to know what was going on with me. Of course, everybody knew what was going on with me, but, you know, I thought that, like, nobody knew. And, you know, isolation allows me to lie to myself, and it allows me to lie to myself and to back up my lies with information that I only get from myself. And like, I am no good at evaluating things that I need to evaluate, because I am also very good at lying to myself just in general. You know, and you know, look, get a little bit of clean time and I can make that shit sound like it came right the fuck out of the basic text, and it's spiritual and profound and whatever, and actually it's skeevy, sneaky, and bullshit. And I can make it sound good, and I can make it sound good to myself. You know, and I was always a professional at making it sound good to myself. You know, isolation, I can isolate. You know, sometimes I tell myself, like, oh, well, you know, it's been such a busy week and you just really need to chill out. And then, you know, the week turns, it's like been such a busy week and you really need to chill out for a week. And then it's been a really busy week and you need to chill out for a month. And then I don't want to answer the phone. And the thing about Narcotics Anonymous is Narcotics Anonymous affords me the ability to have relationships where people will check up on me when I don't want to be checked up on. And I will check up on people when they don't want to be checked up on. And sometimes it's like, you know, I've called you 5 times, and if you don't frickin' call me back, I'm going to come over. Don't make me come down there. You know what I mean? And like, that's what, and like, that's, people have done that to me. And sometimes that's what's necessary, because sometimes I can't get myself out of the hole. And the more I stay in the hole, the more comfortable it gets. And the darkness I'm familiar with. You know, the darkness I'm good at. And, you know, negatives breed the darkness. You know, all the lesses are darkness, hopeless, you know, helpless, useless, loneliness, you know. And I mean, I can be alone, but there was a time when I couldn't be alone and I was just period lonely. And I was lonely and I didn't know how to get out of it. And I didn't want to be alone. I didn't know how to be alone. And I mean, even when I first got clean, I ran myself ragged. Man, I would go to like 3 anniversaries in one day and back across the bridge, back across the other bridge, back over here, and I had to do all this shit and go do all this, you know, because I didn't want to be by myself. Because I didn't like myself. I didn't want to be by myself. So I would do everything in my power to not be by myself. And then they took my driver's license. And of course, you know, I wanted to blow up the DMV and all that stuff, but whatever. They took my driver's license for 2 years, and guess what? I had to learn to be by myself. Because I couldn't jump in the car and leave. You know, my car was my tool to get out. I don't like this. I don't like you. I don't like what you're telling me. I don't like what's happening here. See ya. And, like, I don't have to participate. I'll just leave. And then I was incapable of leaving. And sometimes I was just alone in my house. And sometimes, like, people that, you know, we've been clean together, and they were going to come and get me, and they were going to come pick me up for a meeting and whatever, and I'd be sitting on my front porch with cigarette money and coffee money and milk money and a car sitting in my driveway that I chose not to drive because I didn't want the 11 months backup time and the year for driving on suspended, because jail sucks and the food sucks and it all fucking sucks. So I didn't drive, so I wouldn't drive, and I'd be sitting on my front porch, and whoever they were wouldn't even bother to call me and tell me they weren't coming. So I would sit there and I wouldn't go get my coffee or my milk money or my milk or my cigarettes or whatever, and I wouldn't get to a meeting. And it was like my choice. It's like, am I going to sit by myself in my house? And, you know, what am I going to do? So it's like I had to use the tools, and I had to use the tools that I had been taught, like, you know, call people, and I had a bunch of phone numbers so I could call people, and I had a sponsor so I could call her, and I had all the literature so I could read that, and, you know, did I, while in my 2 years that I was stuck in my house a lot of the times, did I finish all my step work and, you know, fly through all the... No, because I'd rather read a regular book, and I'd rather go play with a dog or whatever, and whatever. But, you know, I mean, I learned to be by myself. Now, was I comfortable by myself all the time? No. You know, and I mean, and being by myself is still not necessarily that good. I can do it. Like, COVID happened and everyone's like, oh my God, we can't go anywhere. I'm like, man, shut the fuck up. I didn't drive anywhere for 2 years. You know, like, so what? Like, who cares? But, you know, sometimes I'd be sitting in my house and it's like, wow, I haven't gotten out of my bed. These are the same pajamas I had on yesterday, because I didn't have to get up and go anywhere, because I could change the shirt and go to a Zoom meeting and they'll think I changed my clothes, and I really didn't. You know, like, it's a total farce, you know, because I'm sitting on my couch dealing with it. And then I was thinking, I come here because I'm no good on my own. I tried to get clean on my own. I tried function like a human being on my own. I tried to learn the things I'm supposed to learn on my own, and it never worked. You know, I could make a good show of it, I could make it sound good, I could make it look good, and it never worked. And it wasn't until I came to Narcotics Anonymous and people started fucking helping me. And, you know, like, I can't see it when I'm in the middle of it. And I can't see that my world is crumbling down. And I can't see the lions and tigers and bears because I'm in the fucking circus. And other people can see them. And, like, I can't see stuff by myself. Now, okay, I've got some clean time. I've gotten better at seeing stuff by myself. I fuck up at a higher level. Things don't go to the extreme like you used to. But I am still capable of doing myself damage. And I am still capable of talking down to myself. And I talk down to myself better than anybody else ever will. And I do that when I am isolated. And I do that when I am not participating. And I do, and people will pull me up on my shit. And Narcotics Anonymous is the only place where people, like, genuinely pull me up on my shit. And I can tell them whatever kind of batshit crazy nonsense is going on in my head that kept me hiding or I didn't want to share. And no one says, you're crazy, you need to leave, we'll see you later. And, you know, when I lost my license, I'm like, everything that happens to me is like this lesson. And then sometimes I don't know what the lesson is until later. Yeah, I meant to kick that out of the way, but I didn't, because I was being nice. Oh, yeah, here's my table. So I lost my license. I had just been to see my grandmother, who was my one unconditional love, and I had to put my dog to sleep, which was the other unconditional love, and I got a ticket, a racing home to go to take the dog to the vet, and it was a motorcycle cop, so he had run my license, and apparently my license had been suspended since March. So, but you know, I didn't know, and I was driving all around, speeding all over the place, and going to conventions, and this and that, and whatever. And I don't know how it happened. Anyway, so I lost my license, and they sent me a letter in the mail that said, you know, you got to come in because you know your license is suspended. And I said, you know, and I'm thinking, of course, because I'm a professional, like, oh, it's just an insurance violation, which means, you know, I didn't pay my insurance, and that happens all the time, and I'll just go back in and pay them. And the little old lady at the DMV is like, no, we sent you a letter, and you were supposed to ask for a special license so you could drive to work and to school and whatever, and you didn't in the magic 15 days, so now you have to give us your license for 2 years. And I was like, well, what do you mean? And she's like, no, seriously, give me your license. And I was like, well, can I ask for the little magical hearing? And she's like, no, you had 15 days in March. And I'm like, it's fucking July. So they took my license. Anyway, you know, I was taught that I was supposed to share in my home group what was going on. So I went to my home group, and of course I don't have my car, because my car is sitting in my driveway, and I chose not to drive. I paid my car off while I wasn't driving it for 2 years, which was kind of cool, because then when I got to drive it, I had shit tons of money for gas, because I drove all over the place again. But, so I went to my home group, and I was trying, and you know, we said, you know, if you want to share, please raise your hand. So I was sitting in the back, because I'm tall, and I fidget, so I figure I drive people crazy. So I sit in the back, because I'm tall, and I fidget. So I was raising my hand, and every time, and I was trying, you know, and I'm supposed to tell my home group what's going on. And raising my hand, and people are, you know, calling out and sharing, and they're not following the fucking rules, and I'm trying to share. So first week goes by, and I don't get to share, and I don't even get to share the burning desire. And, like, this shit is eating me up, because, like, I don't know, like, it, you know, it's just too much shit all at once. So I go back the second week, and, again, you know, politely raising my hand, because this is my home group, and they told me that I'm supposed to lead by example, so I'm politely raising my hand. And again, I don't get to share the burning desire, and I don't get to share at all, because everyone keeps calling out, because they're not following the rules. And then they started, you know, doing the closing thing, and I was like, fuck it, and I this, and got up and stormed out. So, okay, so I don't have a car. Like, I rode with my sponsor. So I storm out, and if I had had a car, I'd have peeled tires out of that parking lot and whatever. Don't have a car. My sponsor follows me out. She follows me back and forth, and I'm like cussing and bitching and whatever. And so I was like, fuck this. This is bullshit. So I went back inside, and they were doing the announcements, and I rolled in, and I said, I'm Elizabeth, and I'm an addict, and I've been trying to share in here for 2 fucking weeks, and all you motherfuckers are raising your hand for burning desire, talking about making goddamn tea at work. That's bullshit. And tell them, like, my grandmother's this, and I had to put my daughter to sleep, and now I lost my license, and blah, 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 blah. And I was crying, and I was cussing, and I was apologizing for disturbing the announcements, whatever. And it was all, and then it was like, you know, thanks for letting me share. And I sat back down, and they finished the announcements. And I felt like the air had been let out of the balloon, and I felt like if I had not let that shit fly, that my head was going to explode, and I would have gotten home, and I would have gotten my keys, and I would have gotten my car, and I would have driven, and who knows if I would have driven into a wall, or I'd driven and killed somebody. You know, I haven't killed anybody drunk driving, but I'm a professional drunk driver, and I professionally drank and drove for 22 years, so, you know, God's on my side. He kept all the people safe, and you know, so, but that was my lesson, that, like, no matter what's going on up here, it doesn't matter what I say. And you know what, my home group did not fire me as GSR. Several people came up and said, don't you feel better? And I'm like, yes, as a matter of fact, I do. You know, and they're like, and it was cool. And I went back the next week, and everyone was like, yeah, what's up? So, like, it's okay. Now, was it pretty? Was it graceful? No, not at all. But did I feel better when it was over with? Yes. So it doesn't matter what comes out of my mouth when I'm up here isolating in my head, which is the worst place to be. It doesn't matter. You know, and coming into a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, it doesn't matter what I say. It doesn't matter what I'm thinking. It doesn't matter if it is causing me pain or keeping me separate, because I'm unique and I'm special and the shit's only happening to me. And I don't know what to do about it, but I'm afraid to ask because people are going to think I'm nuts, or they're going to think I can't handle myself, or shouldn't I know that by now? And I got, you know, like, well, you're only doing what you should have been doing all along. Okay. whatever. And those are the lies that I tell myself, and no one's ever sat me down and said, you know what, you're just doing what you should have been doing all along. And a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, my mother will do it. You know, she's a pro, but I don't talk to her about shit like that. You know, I'm like, I know. And I learned in here to set boundaries. So now when she goes there, I'm like, you know, we've already been here, and you know what happens, and you asked me a long time ago, how long do I have to go to those meetings with those people? And I said, how long do you want me to be this person that you gave a key to your house? And she said, I think they do a meeting at the little community center down the street. And I'm like, okay, I think I'll go. You know, but I come here to protect myself. And from myself, you know, and like, I don't have to do this alone, you know, and we always do like the serenity prayer, and it's like, you know, it'll work if you work it, and it's like, I always say, I'm no good on my own, because I'm no good on my own. I can't do this by myself, and I can't see what I need to see by myself. Now, and you know, I call people, and I talk to people, and I go to meetings, and I listen at meetings, and you know what? I can't do it without a higher power either. And I got here, and I was like, please. Say please in the morning. Say thank you at night. Okay. You know, as far as I was concerned, I didn't really have a God. You know, there was some God that, you know, they had in Sunday school and shit, but I didn't really like him because there was some stuff that went on, and, you know, it's like, okay, well, never mind about him. And, you know, now I have a God that, he looks like an ex-Viking dude who can still kick some serious fucking ass and whack people with an axe, and he has my back. And there have been times when I have cussed God out from a fetal position on the floor. And I was thinking about this the other day. I was, you know, of course, you know, there's the slew of, you know, relationship travesties, you know, throughout my using and when I got clean. And then I swore off men for a while. And then I started dating this guy. And, like, it was really good. And it was, like, the best relationship I'd ever been in my life. And, you know, like, our parents met. And it turned out my dad knew his dad. And they both worked at Westinghouse. And it was so cool. And we were going to get married. We were going to do this. And we were going to do that. And we were going to do the other thing. And it was just going to be fucking fabulous. And yay. And this is my reward for being clean. And look how clean. And he's clean, too. Yay. Whoopee, whoopee. And then it was the best relationship I've ever been in until it wasn't. And it wasn't, like, I don't hate him. It wasn't a, you know, like, throwing, it wasn't any of that. But when it was over, I had invested time into this whole future that we had. Not that I had, that we had. So all of a sudden, I had nothing. Like, I didn't have a future because we didn't have a future. And that was like, I think I had like 7 or 8 years clean. And that was like the hardest fucking summer of my life. And I honestly considered, you know, not using, but just like, I don't fucking want to be here anymore. And I remember being on the floor screaming at God, you know, I can't fucking do this. And if this is staying clean, you can fucking have it. And I remember, you know, this is my imagination, but I don't really care because I like it and I'm using it. Somebody patted me up, like, you need to go to sleep, and we'll fucking talk about this tomorrow. And you know what? I didn't use over it, and the next day it wasn't as bad. As bad. And I talked to people about it. And I talked to people about it, and it was like, wait a minute, I have a future. You know, it's not that we don't, we're not going to, you know, have some, you know, motorcycle motel, whatever the fuck, down off the dragon. Like, that was, you know, that was one of them. But I mean, it went, and we, like, we had a fabulous time, but then we didn't. And, you know, and anyway, it was like, oh, wait a minute, I do have a future. But I got caught up in being in this, you know, wonderful relationship that was so fabulous that I had isolated myself from, like, talking to my sponsor as much as I should, going to as many meetings as I should, doing as much step work as I should, praying as much as I should, because look, I got everything I prayed for. You know, and that was it. And like my life, obviously I have arrived and my shit's complete. And my shit was not complete. And so I had to like rebuild relationships within Narcotics Anonymous with my network, with everybody. Like, you know, hey, I'm alone and I'm really fucking alone. And I need help. And anytime I ask for help, I get it. So I have to remind myself, when I get into the tunnel, that all I have to do is ask for help and someone will bring a fucking light. know, and maybe it'll get me a little bit out of the tunnel, and then someone else will bring, you know, a beacon, and then, you know, we get the stadium lights, and then all, you know, shit's yay, whoopee-doo for, you know, a couple months, and then I'll go back in the tunnel again. You know, like, who knows? I don't know. And I was thinking, you know, I have to, I did all this research, and I did all this, did all my little notey notes, but I found this in Living Clean. And it's, when our beliefs and perceptions are changing, we can experience pain and confusion that leaves us feeling isolated. We can be cut off from others, but also from ourselves and our higher power. Sharing with others at these moments is critical. And like, there have been times when I have had to switch up my network, and I have had to switch sponsors, and, you know, not idly switch sponsors, but switch sponsors like my sponsor stopped going to meetings. And it's like, oh my God, I can't do that, because I was here in 92, and I know what the hell happens when I stop going to meetings. I go out, and I barely made it back. So I can't have you not going to meetings. It's not going to work for me. Because then I'm going to think I don't have to. Because I'm follow the leader. You know? So I had to get a different leader. Okay. You know, but I don't want to do it. And then I'm isolated because my one sponsor knows everything about me. And now I got to tell this other one. Like, it's really not that big of a deal, but it is, you know, and it's like you have to get vulnerable again, and then, some of my network gets a little skeevy. Okay, I'm good at skeevy. I will follow you skipping down the yellow brick road into the blackness, and if I'm around a bunch of skeevy, I can't do it, you know, and I have to have a perception, and, you know, I've called people and said, what do you think of this? Like, this really made me uncomfortable, and they're like, yeah. Made me uncomfortable. And then, you know, 19 people say it makes them really uncomfortable and they think it's a little skeevy. And then one person was like, yeah, I'll fucking see any problem with it. And it's like, you know, what answer am I looking for? What answer am I looking for? Who am I going to listen to? And that, so the isolation from God, you know, I go through phases where, you know, I'm not praying enough and I feel it. And I go through phases where I'm not going to enough meetings and I feel it. And it's like, if I miss a couple meetings in a row, I'm squirrely, I'm judgmental. I need input from others than myself. When I isolate myself from everything that's going on, I don't get to feed whatever in here needs feeding, you know? And look, the disease uses my isolation to, you know, take me out. And, you know, I've been close, you know, and I've considered suicide many times when I was using. The only reason I've done the practice slice with a knife, and I've done the how fast do I have to drive my Jeep into that tree to really take myself out, because I don't really want to be paralyzed. I just want to be fucking gone. And, you know, I never went all the way. But I know what it looks like. And I know what it feels like, and it's fucking bleak and dark. So yes, it's a dark room. You know, and like somebody was like, "Oh, you're doing the meeting in a dark room," and I'm thinking, "Yeah, we are in a cave, aren't we?" So like, this is what the inside of my brain looks like without all the happy faces when I'm isolated. It's black and dark. We'll cut the lights out. You know, maybe a little candle floating around somewhere. You know, so I always say, like, I'm in charge of my good time. I'm in charge of my recovery. I'm responsible for my recovery. I'm responsible for where I choose to get my information. So I have to make an effort to get it. So my isolation from God, if I'm not praying, prayer to me is an action word. I got to pray. And when I pray about, like, gee, I really need some patience, okay, then God is going to give me a lot of opportunity to get a lot of patience. But, and people are like, well, be careful what you pray for. Well, you know what? If I'm praying about it, I am asking for it to be brought to the forefront of my consciousness so I will notice when something happens that is supposed to give me some kind of inkling of an answer. Okay, so I'm praying about something. I'm responsible for keeping an eye out for the answer. And I have learned in here that I get the answer from talking to my sponsor, from doing step work, from going to meetings, from calling other addicts. Like, that's where I get my hit from. And if I am not paying attention and I am not making an effort to get the hit, which is my responsibility, then I am not participating in my recovery and I'm not going to get what I need. Now, sometimes I will cut myself off from that just because my disease comes in many forms and shapes and sizes. And, you know, sometimes it's Netflix and sometimes it's, you know, like, I don't even know. You know, sometimes it could be Wednesday and I can't answer the phone. I have made an effort to cultivate people who love me dearly and who are willing to call me and say, I've called you 5 times. If you don't answer the phone, don't make me come down there. You know, and like, that's my weapon. Like, that's my weapon. And prayer affords me the ability to ask for things that I need. And because I have prayer as an action word, I am actively praying for a solution to whatever it is that's eating me up. Then I get to actively notice what's going on. So, now you totally threw me off with that. See, I'm tired and I'm old. So I should be in my pajamas right now. You realize that, right? Okay, so here's another quote. And I don't know where this is from because I am not a book thumper and I don't know where the fuck shit comes from, and I just scribbled it down and I'm going to be lucky if I can read it because I was freaking out earlier. So it says, reaching out is the beginning of the struggle that will set us free. So maybe a struggle is going to set us free. It will break down the walls that imprison us. Okay, so I don't need to build walls. Like, walls suck. And I'm tall, I can climb most walls. But you know, I can't climb the walls that I build inside my head without help. You know, I read that and immediately, because I'm a total Pink Floyd, like, way too much acid, comfortably numb chick. And of course I go to tear down the walls, you know, the whole whatever. Like, I could play it in my head. I would sing it for you, but I'll let them do it. So it's like my responsibility to keep an eye on what's going on with me, but it's also my responsibility to actively seek things that will keep me out of the dark hole. And I have gotten better at noticing when I'm starting to go in. Now, will I ever be absolutely perfect at it? No. Never, 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 never. Which is why I always have to still actively pursue all the things that helped me in the beginning, all the things that are going to help me in the end, all the things that are going to help me in between. And like, none of those ever change. And all of them start and end with Narcotics Anonymous. Like, this is the only place that has ever even given me a little glimmer of light at the end of the tunnel. You know, like, just, you know, my life was a bleak shithole. And it was dark and it was ugly. And I was ugly, and I was ugly in my soul, and I was ugly in my head, and I was just like a miserable human being. And I did not want to go to sleep at night without being sure that God was going to take me out of here before I woke up in the morning. And when I wake up in the morning, I would say, oh, you've got to be fucking kidding me. I don't want to be here. Like, I don't feel like that anymore. Most of the time. But it's my job to keep going to meetings so that I don't feel like that anymore most of the time. You know, and that's all I got. Thanks for letting me share.
And our next speaker tonight is George.
My name's George. I'm an addict.
Hey, George.
You know, thanks for your lead, Elizabeth. You know, I hate topic meetings. You know, and I'm just going to speak the way I speak about. What is our topic anyway?
Isolation.
I was serious.
Look, I got it right here. For
isolation. That's what I need.
The dark room. Okay, I put it right in front of you.
Thanks, bro.
Gotcha.
You know, I'm by nature, I'm an extrovert, right? So isolation for me, you know, when I thought about doing this, I'm like, isolation. What do I really got on this? And I started thinking, and I want to talk about using, but you know, when I was using, you know, I was a bar fly, so I was into hanging in bar scenes, and playing bar games and pool leagues and being around people and softball and just, you know, everything went involved. But when I started, as my drug addiction got worse and worse, that started separating me from people, because I like to be around people. You know what I mean? I'm a people person. I want to, matter of fact, to a fault, I will run and run and run and run and run and let things go by the wayside of responsibilities and things, you know. But so I come to Narcotics Anonymous, you know. My clean date is August 26, 1996. And when I come in, you know, I was on probation, and, you know, like most of us were, I was beat up. I had heard of Narcotics Anonymous because in the 80s I was doing a lot of PCP, and they put me away for a while and they introduced me to it from the, I call it a rehab, but it might have been a psych place. I'm not sure. And, you know, but, you know, I heard about AA and NA and I went, but, you know, I didn't stay clean, you know, and it took me about another 8-9 years before I wound up coming back here through, you know, police intervention. And, so I get to Narcotics Anonymous, and I'm pretty much an extrovert, but now, as I'm coming in, I don't understand what's going on, right? I come to meetings. I didn't really have a court slip. I was on probation. I was going to be violated. Couldn't stop using cocaine, right? The drinking was curbed a little bit because I had to blow and go in my vehicle, and I won't go into that joke. And, you know, so here I am. I'm coming to meetings. Because someone said, look, I can't tell you what's going to happen, but if you go to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting and hang around people that don't use, there's a good chance you won't use. You might not get violated on your probation. And at the end of your probation, was that like 7, 8 months, 9 months, whatever left? He said, you can, you know, make a choice and do what you want to do. Sounded like a way to beat things. But so that's what I did. I started going to meetings, and I don't know about you, but I like to go to meetings where I felt like I was being entertained. I wanted to hear war stories. I wanted people to make me laugh, you know, because I could relate to that. I didn't want to go to step meetings. I didn't want to go to tradition meetings. I didn't want to hear about being involved in service and all the real meat and potatoes of Narcotics Anonymous, as I learned out later on as I going through this journey. But, you know, so badly wanting, as an extrovert, wanting to reach out, right? But so consumed by fear, overdriven by fear to isolate. You know, this is what I was thinking about. And it would stop me. My fear would stop me from reaching out to people. Even though there was a part of me that I just wanted to be a part of, in the beginning, I was just afraid. And I didn't know how to do conversations, you know, and try to just engage with people and open with a conversation and say, hey, I'm new and I don't know what to do, but I really don't feel like going back to my apartment and sitting by myself, right? And, you know, and it was so bad. Like, I used to smoke cigarettes back then. I don't smoke no more. I smoke a lot of cigars, but I don't count that. That's another meeting for another time. But I would smoke, and what I'd do, I wouldn't even bring a lighter, right? And so I would come in and I would ask somebody for a light, and hopefully that started a conversation. If they didn't start a conversation, I'd smoke it real quick and ask somebody, oh, hey, you got a light, you know what I mean? And then I'd go in and I'd sit in for the meeting, maybe, you know, then I'd get bored and I'd slide back out in the middle of the meeting to go out and smoke. And you know how we do in the beginning. And I'll never forget Jan. She told me, you know, why don't you sit down and listen to the whole meeting? Because it might just save your life instead of going out. And I would like to say that's how I heard it, but I was so pissed off at it. I said, bitch, I'll sit through this meeting. I'll show you how I won't go outside, right? And the whole time I couldn't hear nothing because I was just furious at her because she stopped me from going out and smoking. But what she did, she started me, like Elizabeth talking about, when you read that thing about reaching out, you know what I mean? As this isolation, you know, as the fear subsided, and my isolation, because I started participating, I started reaching out, right? And then things started happening, you know? I became known because I was doing the suggestions of getting a reading and coming to and just getting to the meeting before the meeting. Being for a meeting. Grab a reading to, you know, because that's my daughter. I'm George. Who's that? George Addict. Reading. Too afraid to share, right? But, you know, just participating. Hoping for conversations. Hoping for somebody to invite me out after the meeting, because they were all going somewhere to get something to eat. not realizing that all I had to do was step up, right? And say, hey man, I don't know what to do. Can I go? I don't want to go sit home in my apartment by myself, right? And isolate. It was a process for me. And as this went on, you know, and then, you know, you start getting engaged, and I became a member of Narcotics Anonymous, right? Somewhere along the line, the obsession and compulsion to use went away. And then, you know, started, had a sponsor, started doing some step work, got involved in service, right? Participated. Like I said, I like being around people, right? I fell into it, Narcotics Anonymous. I bought into the program. And the benefits served me, right? In hindsight, when I look back and serve Narcotics Anonymous, it served me. It kind of goes hand in hand. So, you know, this about sitting home and isolating, you know, that wasn't me. When I sat home, or if I didn't go to meetings for a few days in a while, I looked at it as, you know, I've been going. I've been working. I could rest. I should be able to relax. You know, and, you know, things went kind of hand in hand, right? If I felt squirrely, I'd go to a meeting. I didn't have to go to a meeting every day. I started getting some clean time. That is where isolation come in. And isolation come in for me, not even knowing it's isolation, was coming in the form of justification. Because I could justify my actions, right? I got some clean time now. You know, time comes. And we go through phases, in my opinion. You know, like when you first get clean, you're trying to fit in, then you fit in, then you get 3 years clean and you know everything, and we should be able to let NA come to me, I'll make all the fucking decisions. I got 3 years clean, I got this. And then, you know, you get the 5 year, the nickel, and you're like, oh man, 5 years is great. And then you trudge along through 6, 7, 8, and you hit the ho-hum, fucking 9. Who fucking, come on, 10 years clean, right? You know, and it just keeps going on. But, you know, so I go through these different battles, but what happened to me, and I want to bring it up to present, and there's quite a few guys in this room here that are very important to me, friends of mine. I mean, Kevin was here when I first got in, right? Him and his brothers are the reason that helped me stay clean. I was in California for work, I don't know, 7, 8 years ago? Probably 8 years. See, I got to ask people. And I had about 17 years clean then, right? 17 years clean. And I've been to California before. I've been up to Lompoc, right? Now, addicts will probably know where Lompoc is. That's where the federal prison is. You know, other people might not know where that's at. It's a little town north of Santa Barbara, right? So, but anyway, I'm going to L.A. this time. I get to go to L.A. Never been to Los Angeles, right? So I'm out there and I'm like hanging out. I'm there for work. Work's paying for it, right? On a government dime. Ain't costing me nothing. I'm having a good time. I'm running up and down the beaches, right? World Cup soccer's going on. Volleyball, girl volleyball on the beach. Now I'm a married man. I ain't doing nothing wrong, but I am enjoying myself, right? And I'm just having a good time, right? The Brazilian tents over here, I swear they had enough material for one baby suit. There must have been 50 people there. It was crazy, right? So I'm just like, I'm having a good time, right? Not doing anything wrong, just enjoying life, right? Because that's what recovery's about, right? I got clean, I'm working, I'm faithful, I'm responsible, I'm productive, I'm working steps. Just, you know, fuck an L.A. meeting, right? Who needs to go to a meeting? I got 17 years clean. I ain't going. All this, Narcotics Anonymous is really intertwined in so many aspects. And I just find it fascinating. So in this midst of me having a great time and enjoying myself and living life, my phone rings. This one got ran over this morning. My brand new iPhone got ran over on the way here. Fucking crazy. You know, luxury issue. So my phone rings, and I look at it. I'm like, fuck. It's my sponsor, Rob. He's in the meeting here, right? He's calling me while I'm in L.A. What are you doing? I'm in L.A. I'm having a good time. So you going to any meetings? Real key thing here, I like to say. When you have a sponsor, it's the one person you should always be honest with. If you can't be honest with nobody, be honest with your sponsor. And he said, are you going to meetings? I'm like, oh, fuck no. He goes, what do you mean? I said, man, I'm out in LA, right? Having a good time, never been here. I'm eating the good food, I'm beautiful weather, I'm checking the beaches out, I'm just having a good time. Kind of lied a little bit, said, I don't know when I'll be back. I've been going there for 8 years now for work, right? I don't know whether I would get back out here, right? He goes, I need you to do me a favor. That's when I held the phone away from me. I was going, son of a bitch. Because he's going to ask me to do something. I'm going to give him my word. And because I'm a responsible member of Narcotics Anonymous, I'm going to keep my word. I know I'm going to do it, but I'm hating, right? I was out there. I didn't realize I'm isolating. I'm justifying my behaviors because I'm just enjoying life, right? I got 17 years clean. Been in the same home group, ride with the tide, the only home group I ever had for 22 years, right? This was pretty, 17 years. I said, all right, whatever. So he goes, I want you to do me a favor. He says, I want you to go to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. I want you to get a phone number of one person. And then, I don't know, but I was raised Catholic. And my mom used to let me go to church on Saturday night with my buddies. She knew I wasn't going to church. She said, but when you get there, make sure you bring a bulletin home. She said, at least I knew you walked in the building, right? Rob says, get a number, go to a meeting, get a number, and grab me a meeting schedule. I'm like, fuck, make sure I walked in the building, right? You know, experience and wisdom, that's what that is. So I'm like, okay, I make the commitment, right? So I'm going to do it. And I get, you know, technology, find out where the meeting is. It's like a mile or two from my hotel room. So I go to this, it's a Thursday night meeting. I don't know if anybody's been to LA meetings. They're an hour and a half long. 45 minutes into it, they take a smoke break. So it's no hour and a half long meeting. That shit seems to go on forever. Now, when you're isolating and you're not going to meetings, and then you start feeling squirrely, and you come into the meeting, right, to get the juice, right, you don't feel it, right? I've been gone so long. I haven't been in a couple weeks. I'm not hearing the message, right? Because my mind's squirreling. So what do I do? Do I sit there and say, hey, you know, you're isolating. You're not hearing the message because you're not choosing to hear the message, right? Because you're being out and you're being judgmental and you're not letting the information in. That's not what I say. I start saying, Narcotics Anonymous is not fucking working for me anymore. That's how I want to explain it, right? Because it can't be me. It's got to be you, right? Because I'm in the middle of isolation. I don't know I'm isolated because I'm justified, right? So anyway, I go to this meeting. And it was packed, right? It's packed and they're sharing. And I'm not going to say anything or do anything. I'm just listening, right? And I'm thinking the whole time, just like what I was a newcomer. When will this end, right? When will this meeting end and I can get out of here and go do what I want to do because I made my commitment, I'm done, right? I'm agitated, I'm fidgety, right? The signs are here, I'm just not willing to look at them because I'm too busy with the blame flow, right? I'm blaming everybody else instead of my actions. The one phone number I get that day, Hal. Hal's from Southern California. That is Southern California, all right, right? Yeah, Southern California. I want to make sure I'm geographically correct. So I go over, because he shared something at the end of the meeting. I seen him come up, he rode a motorcycle, I ride motorcycles, I figured we got something in common. So I come over and I introduce myself to him. And he was ecstatic. You're from Baltimore. Man, I was your speaker out there at this convention. I said, I was at that convention. He said, I was a Saturday night speaker. Did you hear me? I said, no, I was out front smoking a cigar. I didn't even go in, right? To be honest, right? And but he's a cigar smoker, so he appreciated that, right? So we started talking. And then he knew people that I knew, and he started saying names, right? So I got his number. Now, I was isolating before that because I was justifying that I was living, but I was really isolated. There's stages, I believe, right? And I'm just coming to this because it's the topic. I never really thought about isolating before, but it's coming to me. And And out of this isolation, and then listening and still being plugged in, because I believe in Narcotics Anonymous. I don't know why we go through these phases, right? And somewhere along the line, I have to, you know, talk about fanning the flame of desire. Sometimes we have to fan our own flame, right? You can tell me all the stuff you want. If I'm unreceptive to your information, then it's useless because it's going to hit this wall, right? Sometimes I have to bring it in. I have to open the door to allow it to come in. And what happened was we wound up becoming really good friends. And then and I'm going to tell about the little book. You mind if I do that? Thanks, bro. And so, you know, we become friends. I call him, and when I go to L.A., I meet him. And I remember I called him one day, hey, I'm coming to town, Hal. And he goes, hey, man, come on over to my house. We'll cook out on the grill, you know. He said, when we met, the first night we met, we went out to eat. He told me to go out and eat, and we went to some little Mexican place. Yeah, I remember. It was, got some tacos or quesadillas. And they were really good. And what he said to me, which stuck with me, he goes, we just broke bread together. Our relationship has just took a new bond. And I love that, man. That hit home with me, right? So I started reaching out when I was going out. And he said, man, come over to my house and we'll cook out. And he goes, are you into archives? And I'm thinking, oh, here we go. Fucking N.A. crazy with all the archives, right? You know what I mean? Judgmental. But what I get, what it was cool was, he goes there and he's got cool stuff. He's got stuff he's been cleaning a long time. He showed me this little book. And he hands it to me. And I look at it. I'm like, huh, that's fucking cool. And he's like, no, open it up and read it. And I'm thinking, I got to read a fucking book? Really? Right here in your house, man? But when I did, I opened up and there was a handwritten note inside. And correct me if I say it wrong. It says, dear Bob, isn't it a shame recovery is not like coffee, instant? But I guess we wouldn't appreciate what we got. Your friend, Jimmy K. Right? Handwritten note from Jimmy K to his sponsor, Bob B. Right? Gives me chills to think about. Right? Because if I don't take the suggestion that my sponsor gives me, if I allow myself to justify what I'm doing, even though I don't know the terms because I didn't know I was isolated, I was justifying living. Right? If I don't reach out and allow the grace of Narcotics Anonymous, which it will throw in my life, I miss the opportunities. Right? So by this friendship that we got, you know, I got to see that note, which sparks my recovery. Right? So for me, it did a lot of things for me. This around 17 years clean. Because we were working in LA a little bit. And then I had to go work down in Houston, Texas for a couple years. I worked for Goddard Space Flight Center. I built satellites, right? Not saying to brag. I'm just saying, you know, sky's the limit. Woo-hoo, that's a joke, you know. And the real deal is I'm working on this payload, right, called the James Webb Space Telescope, right? It's like a $9 billion satellite. It's got these $25 million mirrors with gold all over them. And when I go in the clean room, let's say this, the only thing I think is, well, I like to do a line off of that one, you know, right off that mirror. That thing is looked nice. But I think, you know, they only knew. But you know what I mean? That's just out of thinking. I had to throw that in there. So anyway, I had to go down to Houston. But because of what happened in L.A., I was ahead of this isolation, right? So I go down to Houston. As soon as I get off the plane, I find out where meetings are. And I started plugging in because I knew I was going to be there a while. You know, that little part that I told you about with Hal turned out to be a big part in saving my life and my recovery. Not that I would have used or done something, but the day I buried my mom, the next day I was in Houston. And I remember sitting in that little meeting place that sometimes I went, and they only would be like 2-3 people in that meeting. And I was in there crying because of the loss of my mom. And them guys who didn't know me reached out to me and helped me and supported me and said, hey, what can we do for you, right? Because I've worked through the fears of keeping my mouth shut. I worked through stuff through the step works by going with my sponsor. I worked through some things about isolating, not knowing it was isolation. You know what I mean? And I reached out, and by doing this, and I learned a lot of things from these people in Houston. And that's what's funny about it, because I met Hal, and because of this pandemic, two guys in the back row, Absalon, I forget his friend's name, Aaron. You said it began with a Z. That's not even close. It's on the end of the alphabet. Oh, see, yeah. But they're from Texas, right? They're from Texas. They're up here at the East Coast Convention, man. And this thing just keeps going, right? And we kind of go hand in hand. I don't talk long. How long do I got to talk?
34 minutes.
That ain't happening. I don't. You know.
You got it. 8 minutes.
8 minutes, okay.
5 minute warning.
Okay, thanks. Good, I can wrap this up and go home. You know, because, yes, I am. Houston, because of what he did, and through these guys and meeting, this thing, it where was I going with this? No, I got that, we were past that. Changed my recovery. What happened was basically how this all intertwines is because of following my sponsor, reaching out, talking, plugging back in, not isolating from Narcotics Anonymous. Because I don't isolate, even though I wasn't going to meetings, I wasn't isolating from people. I'm not the kind of person that hides in a bed, right? I don't suffer from that. I don't get into that, right? But what I did, I was separating myself from Narcotics Anonymous in the recovery. That's my version of isolation, right? And when I participate and sit back and then move self out of the way and let my higher power, God, come in, things happen, right? So through Hal and Absalon, Aaron, sponsor Rob, Kevin, Lauren, you know, my brother's back in recovery here, Frank, you know, these guys all met one another, you know. Supposedly staying at somebody's house around here. Who knows where you're staying now. But, you know what I mean? But it just keeps intertwining, man. And this fellowship is just, you know, it blows me away. It blows me away. Why would I want to isolate from this? The gifts that just keep coming are just unbelievable, man. You know? I'm starting to, I'm fucking tired. I'm old. I'd rather do a 4 a.m. meeting than a 10 o'clock at night meeting. So I think you got more out of me than I thought I would give. So I'm going to end on that note and say thanks for having me share.
I'm an addict named Hal. Let's thank Elizabeth and George one more time for sharing with us. Fucking sniveling. Whatever, man. They keep coming back, man. Anyway, I want to say thank you and everyone else that shared for a really good meeting. I believe after a moment of silence for the act that still suffers inside and outside of this room, can you please join me in the serenity prayer? It's not written, but, you know, I'm assuming.